What inspires a successful businessman and attorney, secure in his place in polite society and bolstering by a growing coziness between moneyed interests and the emergent political religious right, to follow instead his conscience and align himself with a more constitutional, inclusive view of America and its values? Alex DeForger is in the rather rare position to be able to answer that question in the first person. A longtime member of the Interfaith Alliance Board and an early champion of State of Belief Radio. As we mark the 14th anniversary of this program, I want to share a conversation that Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline and I conducted together with Alex in New York City a few weeks ago. Sharp as ever at age 96, I think Alex offers some essential insights into following one's conscience and stepping out of one's comfort zone, particularly when the stakes are as high as they have become. And so, here is a part of that conversation. Where is justice today? What do you see as the real problems for justice to attack now? Is it immigration? Is it voting rights? What is it?
Well, I think it's justice itself is under attack. I mean, when the leader of our country disparages the judicial branch and questions their integrity and their decisions and would mischaracterize a decision simply because it was given by somebody who was appointed from the other party and seeking to make the justice system a party issue, Republicans kind of justice and Democrat, I just think that is the most dangerous issue that I see on the basis of philosophy coming out of this current period. Also, whether it be the intelligence, the FBI, the Department of Justice, to say certain things are treasonous or fraudulent or shams. People who have not had a lot of contact with the Justice Department might believe that some of this is true. Yes, there are many issues in which we've got to resolve, whether it be climate or immigration or schools or infrastructure, whatever. But I think the greatest risk is to the pinnings of the democracy, which are based on laws that have been enacted in a democratic society that are applicable to all people and given without fear of reprisal and total independence. And to disparage that whole system of justice is the only thing that holds us as a democracy. Once you can get rid of the judges and those in the Justice Department, well, then it's a free-for-all. So we will still have all of the specific issues to cope with, but just undermining the value of the independence of justice is a frightening concept.
We're seeing a lot of young people, middle-aged people, some older people who are wringing their hands about what's going on in our nation. what advice would you give today to someone deeply disturbed by what they're see happening in our nation? It's happening in government. It's happening in religion. It's happening in justice issues. Tell us what you would say to encourage such a person and to make clear that even one person of goodwill taking action can make a difference.
Well, I think I would start back in the school system. Instruction with respect to some of American history to understand why we are here, how we got here, and what the hopes and dreams of our founders were, and how we have weathered problems as we have gone along with wars and assassinations and a whole roast of problems, that get a sense of what we are here for and what it's all about and what our expectations may be. Next is to stay informed, and with the modern age of communication, you know, maybe you get bits and pieces, but at least to try to stay informed on major issues that are happening in terms of our country, our government, and policy issues. Then I would say get involved. Do what you can. Volunteer. Participate. Have a voice in what's happening. Start in your local community. A lot of the issues are now being sent over to states and not the federal. So get involved there. And by all means, turn out to vote. Yes, your vote does make a difference. Too many of the young, I think, are turned off by what they see in the political world. But if we don't get out there and cast a ballot, things will not change.
Alex, Welton mentioned in introducing you that you maintain a relatively low public profile. But there are a few brief videos of you on the internet from the time you were at Legal Services, mostly taking on people from the very conservative right wing of politics at that point. Some of those folks that you spoke with are yet involved with the current administration. Do you have, I don't know how to put this without making it sound disparaging, do you have respect for the positions that conservatives take in regard to public services for the poor and tax dollars devoted to the uplift of people without financial resources? Or do you think they're just full of, to borrow a phrase from a political candidate, full of malarkey?
There's a question of how much government should we have when there is such a wide and ever-widening disparity between what ordinary people may have financially and what those who have been most fortunate and successful have. I mean, the gap keeps getting larger. And together with that, when there is a desire to have less government, I think that certainly is a conservative point of view. We don't want as many restrictions and regulations, and we don't want government doing many things. That leaves it up to private philanthropy to fund things that I think might otherwise be government activity. For example, major museums should be available to the public generally. Some now are charging admission. They are dependent upon the generosity of their board members. And their board members, not only in museums but in other institutions, with their wealth can determine the operation and nature and functioning of these institutions that used to be public institutions. So it depends. If you're into minerals, you know, you can do things that affect climate change. There are those who are now complaining that some members of these boards who are there by reason of their philanthropic giving maybe are engaged in antisocial kind of activity, which gets to the issue of freedom of speech and the like. But there is a – whether you do a wealth tax or you increase income tax or you have government play a bigger role, I think while it is fine to have private philanthropy and urge people to support charity, including those in poverty as distinct from the arts and the ballet and the educational institution, it's important that there be the opportunity, at least the government, to step up and provide that funding if the philanthropic world is not that engaged. Now, some are already supporting it, you know, there's no doubt. But for the legal services to those who cannot afford, the federal government is now funding the Legal Services Corporation in the range of $400 to $500 million. 40 years ago, the government was giving $300 million. So there has been a loss of support for this program, and there's no way that that program could conceivably serve all the needs of those seeking access to justice. So there is still support from corporations and legal organizations, but it is not something that rings as important in the minds of people thinking of their own charitable philanthropy. It's more likely to be hospitals or institutions of the arts or the like.
You're hearing part of a conversation Jack Moline and I conducted with longtime interfaith activist Alex Forger. Alex, you've been around and worked with scores of prominent political families and politicians. All three of us have now experienced impeachment more times than anyone ought to have to experience in a lifetime. If you could, what would be the major changes that you would make to politics in America in 2020?
Well, that's a rather large assignment. I, having experienced 3 years with our Congress, I may be quite jaundiced by it all. I think the worst was when one congressman wrote me a very nasty letter about how bad the work of one of our entities had been in dealing with an agricultural client, that I showed up after investigating it, speaking to him, and he said, yeah, he understands that and he'd still support us, but you have to realize this was one of his major contributors. And so what else was he to do? You know, I mean, vote his conscience or what he thought was right. So money in politics is a difficult issue to deal with. Terms, endless terms, is another issue. If I had a magic wand, I guess I would suggest perhaps fixed terms for members of Congress. It's sort of a clumsy way of dealing with the issues of re-election because you lose some of the experience and wisdom. But if there isn't the constant need to go raise money and satisfy the desires of a major contributor, that would be helpful. I think another thing I would do is look towards public financing to the extent one needs basically to tell the world who he or she is and why they're running. Another thing, I guess, would be the voting. So many of the states are now engaged in putting obstacles in to improving the numbers of people who can access the polls, closing down some polling places, not having early voting hours. And they're gerrymandering on top of that to try to assure one party stays in versus another. But voting ought to be a national holiday. It ought to be a day in which everybody can go out and vote, not lose a job or lose hours of work, or absentee balloting. Also have paper backups on these machines so as to avoid the claim of fraud, voter fraud, and make registration a lot simpler. So there is much that could be done to improve the electorate and also to make it possible for our elected officials to function on the basis of what's good in the policy and what's good for the country rather than what's good for me to be reelected. I look at the Senate today in the impeachment issue. It just strikes me as being strange that 50-some-odd senators would all be in agreement that there is no reason to have a vote other than oppose the vote. This president has such power over the political future of the people that it's very difficult for folks to exercise judgment in the prospect of loss of their seat in Congress.
Alex is correct that the preamble to the Constitution makes the point that establishing a more perfect union begins with establishing justice. But the Bill of Rights, which is, for lack of a better term, the human-focused aspects of the Constitution, begins with our first freedoms, which are the freedom of conscience and the freedom of government from religion and religion from government. And so there really isn't anything more critical that a citizen of this country can be concerned with than maintaining not only his or her own freedom of conscience, but that of everyone else around them, and access to and the integrity of the justice system as Alex has devoted his life to. That's how I would frame these issues for us today.
Well, certainly there has been more movement on the religious front, prompted in large measure by certain denominations, to normalize governmental activity or support, financial support, even though it is supportive in some measure of their religious activity. I think that is a dangerous issue where there is a lessening of the distinction and the separation between the two. If one looks at abortion, for example, I guess, or woman's health, some religions may conclude that life begins at the moment of conception nowadays, that abortion would become a crime for those who participate in it, whether it be the doctor or the woman. The desire to have the distinction between private and government and the right of an individual to be free of the imposition of someone else's own view of religion becomes ever more critical. It's now into issues that relate to sexual orientation, transgender issues. It's not only birthday cakes and the like, but it's employment rules and regulations. The notion that preachers could, during their worship service, direct parishioners how to vote and where to vote and help them vote for the right party is a dangerous consequence. I believe that should remain free for those who are converts to that. And those of us who do not believe in that denomination or indeed any religion should not be supportive of the views of others that are at odds with your own view. So that's a matter of liberty and freedom.
Alex, you have made contributions to all kinds of institutions and to people. Let me tell you, one of the great contributions you made to Interfaith Alliance while I was president remains in place. You were largely responsible for making it possible for us to launch the weekly radio program that we call State of Belief. I think of you regularly as the theme song begins to play, and I give thanks for your efforts and support that allow us to continue the broadcast. And I wish you would have heard over the years just a sampling of the feedback that I get to hear all the time from listeners who value hearing civil conversations about the importance of religion in our pluralistic secular nation. I can't thank you enough. I know Jack will want to say a word as we go off.
I consider it a great privilege, Alex, to call you my friend and feel sorry for all the people who don't have that opportunity.
Well, I say thank you to Interfaith Alliance. In my time of struggle and concern, in my Washington days, I found an island of support, giving me my full sense of the value of spiritual life and to see people of differing backgrounds finding common ground.
We're both delighted to have had this opportunity to introduce some of the listeners of this story to you. This will play on our radio show, and people will learn what we have learned from you and have the opportunity to take into their minds and think about what we do. It was generous of you to take this time with us. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Welton and Jack, and it's been my privilege to know both of you and to benefit immensely from that experience.